Welcome to the Johnny Dell Football Academy podcast on the channel that's trying to answer the whys and hows of the game by talking through and dissecting game film and diving deeper to explain why the X's zig and the O's zag. I am Adam Marino, joined by Mr. Johnny Dell, and we are reminding you, as always, the most fun way to watch is on YouTube, where we go live. There you can comment into the live show. Be sure to hit the notification bell and turn on your notifications so you can be a part of the conversation. We also stream live on Facebook and X. Also, the audio versions are always found on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Now, if you are live with us in the chat, it's probably because you are subscribed, you've hit the notification bell, and turned those notifications on. So, when sharing with your friends, be sure to let them know. We also love to hear from you outside of our live show. Email us at johnnydellsfootballacademy@gmail.com, and you can always check out the website jfa49.com, as it is the most fun way to support the channel. Also, the way we boost the chat and boost the algorithm is to type out hashtag JD49. Yes, JD49. I will say on that little intro, I love that Marcos C. If you look at our intro video, hashtag JD49, Marcos is in there. And then sure enough, today, as we are a little late and apologize, Marcos C is our fried egg winner. So pretty cool to see Marcos boosting the algorithm. Thank you to all that do that. And I want to start real quick with Technic Chick also boosting the algorithm. And I was going to say something about Trent Taylor, because I do like the relationship that he had with Kittle and the guys, like, and their banter on Twitter. I love that he's back. The first time that he's able to score a touchdown, I think it will mean more than just 6 points for us. And I think it'll be exciting. And I just thought that he was a good overall player for what he was. He's not going to be our top three receivers, I don't think, ever on our roster, but I like him on our team. Johnny, do you like the move?
Yeah, I mean, he's a special teams guy at this point, and that's pretty much what he's been. Now, he also, he's a guy that was, you know, he's a later round pick. Wasn't like we were expecting massive things for him, but I think there was a lot of buzz from him, especially that 2017 year was at the end of the year there with Jimmy G. You were almost thinking, okay, did they find their Wes Welker kind of a thing? And then it didn't quite work out to be that way. He dealt with some injury issues. I remember he had some foot issues. And then he went to the Bears and was pretty much a special teams guy there, but they're bringing him back. He's always been a solid special teams guy. And really, I think, again, much like the 2011 NFC Championship game, this year the 49ers really saw the need for a full-time punt return guy, kick return guy, because special teams can really cost you in the biggest games of the year. And, you know, it's if you have somebody there who has done this, been there, done that, is an established vet, and is extremely reliable, that is very valuable. And they really, since Trent Williams left, we have not had a solid, good, like reliable punt returner, kick returner person that you felt like there was no concerns. There was never a worry about that guy back there. Really, there's been people who've given you cause for concern and heartburn at that spot ever since Trent left. So, yeah, I like it. It reminds you of when the 49ers under Harbaugh brought in Ted Ginn Jr., who really, I mean, he was an okay receiver for us, but was a phenomenal returner. And I remember it was Harbaugh's early, I think it was his second game It was the second game of the year against the Seahawks. It was either first or second game of the year in 2011 when Harbaugh came in, that the 49ers only won that game because Ted Ginn Jr. had two returns for touchdowns in that game. And they won by a small margin. Like, it was, I remember freaking out when we won that game. But, you know, never underestimate the value of a good return guy.
Yeah. No question. We have had some fumbo-rooskies in our history that are not so fun. What is so fun is to talk about all of these draft picks, who's on the list, who's not on the list, who is worth talking about being on the list. And so, number one, I will say, if you have missed any of the shows in the last couple of weeks, be sure to catch us on YouTube, the most fun way to watch us. And kind of as we go through a little bit, trip down memory lane, as you say, to take a look at the draft. And we're getting excited for the draft. Obviously, you know, the NFL draft, I think, does a very good job in, they've realized over the last decade that the draft is a huge deal. It is, because the number one thing that it signifies is hope. And so every team has hope, whether you have the number one pick or now, if you have the Mr. Irrelevant pick, you still have hope, obviously, as we may get into that later. But I think the NFL has finally realized that this is a big deal and we need to make it a bigger deal. And it just hypes us up to get ready for the NFL season. So let's get into it. We've gone through all the first round picks, the second, the third, you know, all those. We're going through now just the late round picks. We're just classifying everything because, as you know, the draft has shifted in the way they do things. And before, you had, you know, 9, 10, 11, whatever rounds, and now you don't have that many. So we're just encompassing everything. And so we want to get number five.
Yeah, and also remember, the reason why the NFL draft, you know, the rounds started reducing was because there were so many expansion teams. And so, you know, there used to be to 30 rounds in the draft. In the 50s, there was, you know, round pick in, you know, whatever, it was like 330 in round 30 of the NFL draft, because there was 10 teams. And now, you know, there's seven picks. Insanity. And it's wild too, because some of these picks you look at and you say, okay, yeah, you know, that's a really good career for a sixth round pick. And then you look and it was like the 110th pick in the draft, which now is an early third round pick or middle third round, or excuse me, fourth round pick. That's a big difference when you're talking a guy, you know, when you're in the same area where it's a guy picked 110th and guys at 262. There's a big difference there. There's a lot of players there that are different. And so, you know, it's really fascinating to look over the years. But yeah, we're just classifying everything sixth round and later as late round picks. And it was it's also really fascinating to look through the list too, because there were two drafts. There was the American Football League and there was the United Football League, or the National Football League, excuse me, where I was thinking the UFL because of the UFL's right near me, but that you had two drafts. And so there are some players that are picked as a late round pick that are listed by the 49ers and had some really good careers, but they actually got drafted to the American Football League. And that's where they chose to go. So it's fascinating to see that too. You see that as a draft pick and you're like, I don't remember that guy playing for the 49ers. And you look at it and his entire career is like, with the Packers, and you go, okay, yeah, no, you know, that wasn't the case. But so really interesting to see that. But this was, I always think this is going to be an easier time putting this list together than it is when you start looking through and you remember some of the names and you go, ah, I don't know if I can leave that name off, you know, or where does this guy fall on the list? It's tough. I think some people are going to have some issues with a couple of guys I have on there and a couple of guys I don't. So I'll kick it off. For me, at number five, fifth best late round pick in 49ers history, and this may be a little presumptive, it may be a little early, it may be too soon, as some people would say, but I'm going to go with the Mr. Irrelevant, Brock Purdy, who was the infamous seventh round pick in the 2022 NFL draft. And here's why. Okay. When you talk about singular impact, if we don't have Brock Purdy and that we don't hit on that draft pick, this franchise is screwed. So,
which is why he's higher on my list. Thank you.
Which well, and but you'll see, you know, for me, it's just the when you look at the accolades of everybody else that I have on this list, I couldn't put him higher again because he's only just finished his second season in the league. But franchise record holder.
Exactly. That's already
passing yards. Number two in passing touchdowns in a season, has taken the team to an NFC championship game and a Super Bowl, and overtime away from a Super Bowl win. I have Brock Purdy there. And I don't think anybody would argue that he shouldn't be on this list somewhere. I think some people like Adam are going to say he should be higher.
Yes.
But and you're probably going to crucify me for who I have as number four ahead of Brock Purdy. It's
all right.
I almost make fun of myself.
It's all right. It's all right. We love you.
I will justify it. I will justify it.
Hey, this is why we have the show, right? If someone doesn't like it, they can have their own show. So, all right. So for me, number five is Lee Woodall. And I just
he's on my honorable mentions.
So
I had such a hard time not having him on the list. Oh my gosh. I loved Lee Woodall. I love Lee Woodall. Like when it was NFL Pro. There was like three NFL games, four NFL games, I think, out for consoles for gamers in the late 90s. I was in junior high and I remember one, like there was NFL Blitz, which obviously was not real football at all. There was Madden, which has become what it is. I believe Sega had just started the 2K series on theirs. I want to say it was NFL Pro, something like that. And it was very similar to Madden. I thought it was a little bit better at the time, but I remember Lee Woodall was my guy. Like I would play as Lee Woodall every single time. Came out in 97 or 98 and he was still with the 49ers. But yeah, Lee Woodall does remind you of Evander Holyfield. Collie saying that, you know, weird thing. I know Evander Holyfield's nephew. So, and he looks just like him. Like I met him and I was at this thing and I was talking to him and I was like, has anyone ever told you, you look a lot like Evander Holyfield? He's like, that's my uncle. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Lee Woodall, great player. You can go with his accolades if you want. It's your pick. I was about to run away with it.
No. You're good. For me, it isn't necessarily always about certain accolades. For me, it's more, look, he's a late round pick. You're not assuming at the time when you draft him that he's going to be, you know, an impact guy. You are swinging for the fences on late round picks. And what his impact was from 94 to 99, when we had some not so amazing years, he to me, Pro Bowler in 95 and 97, obviously won the Super Bowl with us, 352 tackles for a guy drafted when he was. I just don't think I can leave him off the list of what he meant to Ken Norton Jr. and just that whole group, like what he meant to them. Gary Plummer, like those, you ask those guys, they wouldn't ride with anyone else but Lee Woodall. And so for that reason, he's my number five.
Yeah, Lee Woodall from the Westchester Golden Rams in 1994. He was also, people forget, he was ranked, he was sixth in Defensive Rookie of the Year voting that year. And as a guy coming in, again, sixth round pick on a Super Bowl contender, a team that was expected to win the Super Bowl. to come in as a sixth round pick, even just make the team, let alone start on that team and start for years. That is a big accomplishment. Big props. Lee Woodall, one of my favorite 49ers, and really brought a lot of speed there and was a big part of them, you know, shutting down and limiting Emmett Smith in that night in against Dallas in 1994. So big time guy there. I love it at number five. I didn't have him on my list. He was on my honorable mentions.
What I remember too about Lee Woodall is for about a decade, literally, like it was in jest, but not. Chris Berman was about the most famous face in football for a decade, and he would make his Super Bowl picks, and it would be Bills versus 49ers. And I'm not kidding. For 10 years straight, he did that because those franchises were that good. Mm-hmm. And on Sunday Night Football, when the Bills came into San Francisco, Lee Woodall just, oh my gosh, had one of the best games. And it just, there's certain things that you just remember as a fan. They're random. They're completely random. You may remember certain things that I'd be like, I forgot that. When you mentioned Ted Ginn's two touchdowns, I remember it now kind of, but I was like, oh, good pull, you know? And so it's just one of those things. This is my list, you know? So number four, who do you have?
Well, just a quick sidebar there. Technician has said, you know, you think back through the 49ers linebackers that they've had over the years. And you know, people have talked about teams with great linebacker lineage, like the Steelers, like the Bears. You know, those are teams that are seen as these great linebacker organizations. The 49ers, that's to me, fair, are so vastly underrated as far as their linebacker lineage. When you talk about Ken Norton Jr., Patrick Willis, Fred Warner, you're spanning 30 years of almost nonstop, really good linebacker play. Yeah, there's some gaps in there, a couple gaps in there, but you have this lineage that goes so long. And remember, 30 years ago was not as recent as some people think. That was 1994, just so we remember. Because I know if I mention 30 years, people are going to be like, going back to 1980? No, it's not that time anymore. You know, you have Keena Turner, you have Gary Plummer, you have Lee Woodall. You know, we've talked about a number of these guys over the years, and Dre Greenlaw and Navarro Bowman and all the players that have been so good at that position for so long, that really the 49ers, you know, they have been able to be a linebacker factory for 40 years. And I think they're vastly underrated for their ability to pick linebackers. But my number four is not a linebacker. He may have had the mentality of a linebacker, but he was not a linebacker. And he was, for years, the only player that when it came to the end of the season and the Pro Bowl and the All-Pro, or the Pro Bowl was happening, the only real player that the 49ers were sending to the Pro Bowl during these years.
Oh, gosh, I know it. The punter.
That is...
Number four.
The... Andy Lee.
So he's on honorable. He's on my
University
honorable.
Of Pittsburgh.
Because he's a punter, bro.
He was the last active player picked in that year's draft. So he was that year's Mr. Irrelevant.
No,
but
bro. No.
Johnny. He was a three-time Pro Bowler. A three-time All-Pro. Big shout out to Zach Schrout here with the huge super chat. He hasn't been able to be alive because work gets crazy. This series has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much, Zach. I know, you know, doing what you do, you're doing some great work for everybody in the country. And I know you probably, you know, with everything going on in the world, you probably got a lot on your plate. So big shout out to you and everything. Zach's a great guy.
What's the super friend super of the chat?
He puts the super, super, super in super chat.
Good Lord.
And Zach's probably not going to agree with me that Andy Lee.
Yeah, no one is.
To be above all the honorable mentions.
Your wife and Brock kids Purdy. Won't agree. Your wife
but
and
look,
kids don't
look,
agree.
Look.
Andy
look,
Lee. I love that look, guy.
Tell me another guy on this list who has three all pros. I know of one. Okay. I know of one other guy, and he's higher on my list. But nobody else has three All Pros. He's a multiple record holder for in the NFL. He still holds the record for most punts downed inside the 40, inside the 20 yard line. He had 42 punts downed inside the 20 yard line in it was 2007.
It was a
phenomenal year.
You are missing players.
There are players. I said it was hard, but
no,
but
look, it's not hard to keep, to just have Andy Lee on honorable mention and keep it pushing.
Are you okay? So are we saying that just because a guy's a punter means that his accolades don't mean something?
The short answer, yes.
You're the reason.
That's the why, short.
It's look, people like you are the reason that there's not more kickers and punters in the Hall of Fame.
Good. Keep it pushing.
Just remember, every time it would get to the end of the season,
you can count on one. It's not like baseball where you have to have an all-star.
The season was over because we were a 4-12 team. You knew it was over since training camp, and you were watching everybody else play in the playoffs, but the Pro Bowl came around and you could watch our long snapper who made it to the Pro Bowl and Andy Lee. And that was it. It was like, there's our two guys. There's 49ers players on the Pro Bowl. And we would always say, hey, we got two Pro Bowlers on our team. We're set to go for next year. Andy Lee, the brightest spot. Well, okay. Not the brightest spot, because you also had like Frank Gore and Patrick Willis and Joe Staley.
But who are those bums?
Yeah. But they were high round picks. Andy Lee was the last pick in that year's draft.
Yeah.
So
Hunter and Zach's just making it worse.
And the only reason, and Zach is like, to be fair, the teams he was on, we needed a good punter. You did. Those offenses. Do you not remember the Jim Hostler offense? There was a reason Andy Lee was punting like every single drive. That Jim Hostler was, for those who forget, we had Norv Turner as our offensive coordinator. That was 2006. Frank Gore had the nearly 1,700 yards rushing. Alex Smith threw for about 3,000 yards. Everyone's like, the 49ers' future is great. It's bright. It's amazing. Norv Turner left in April to go be the head coach of the Chargers. That was so late in the hiring cycle that they couldn't find a good offensive coordinator. So they promoted quarterbacks coach Jim Hostler to be offensive coordinator, and they set records for being the worst offense maybe the NFL has ever seen. They brought in Ted Tolner, who had worked with the 49ers in the 90s and in the early 2000s as an offensive a consultant. I think it was around like week 12 or 13, and the offensive production nearly doubled just bringing somebody else in who said, hey, you may want to throw the ball here, that would sit in the booth and tell Jim Hostler that stuff. Okay, they were awful, and Andy Lee was the only person that kept them in some games. So, Andy Lee, number 4. Go ahead and roast me, everybody.
There. All right. Jeopardy music is over. I guess we're finally done. Good Lord. I'm not saying that he wasn't.
And then he got traded for a better pick than he was selected at. So, look.
I'm just saying he doesn't belong on the top 5. I'm not saying that we can't praise him. I'm not saying that. He just doesn't belong. But who does belong is someone who we have all met on this very show.
I thought you'd have him higher.
And he, well, and I'll explain why, I guess. I mean, but you can definitely take a look at August 8th from last year and take a look. If you have not seen that show, you're going to want to, because it was so fun for us to talk to number 61, Jesse Sapolu, and I have him at number 4. And the reason why we were talking to him was because the day before belonged to someone that might show up later on the list as well. But yeah. Jesse was so great to be on the show, just talking stories. Like, you could tell there was a couple things that he mentioned that he probably doesn't get a chance to talk through all the time, and it was just so fun to talk to him, from stories about the some of the players, and of course some of the ones that are more famous, like Deion Sanders was just a great story. But so if you haven't checked out that episode. It is, I believe, August 8th from 2023. So for obvious reasons, four-time Super Bowl champion, he is on this, going to be on this list. But yeah, Jesse Spolu, shout out.
Yeah, I mean, Jesse Spolu, 11th round of the 1983 draft. And I remember Jesse talked about, we had a great conversation with Jesse, and he talked about when he was drafted that he was like, how am I even going to make this team? You know, that was his first goal, was just making the team, because the 49ers had a very good offensive line. And he was there as an offensive lineman and brought in the 11th round and was like, oh, dear. And then he dealt with injury issues for his first 2 years. And he said that was the hardest thing of feeling like he could play, but thinking, I just need to survive on the team until I can show that, because he was dealing with the injury problems. And he really credited Bob McKittrick for believing in him and having a big part of him staying there with the 49ers, and then became the amazing player he was, a guy who won 4 Super Bowls with the 49ers. That's a big deal. And, you know, really, Jesse, and what we talked to him about as well, because so I can lead this into Jesse's number 3 on my list. So sure. Yeah, it'll be my next one. So we'll just keep it rolling. He's a 2-time Pro Bowler, but should have been many, many more. And that's why he's high on my list, because he probably should have been a 5-time Pro Bowler. But multiple seasons, he would move from either guard to center or center to guard because of injuries or different things. And every time he did that, and even if it was for one game, if he went from guard to center and then the next game and started at center, and then the next game went from center and started back at guard, he would lose all of his Pro Bowl voting. And so he had to start from the bottom again. And he talked about that in one season that they approached him. It was week 12 or 13. I'm trying to remember exactly when it was, you know, piecing all the different years together from so long ago, that they asked him to move positions. And he had a clause in his contract that said if he made the Pro Bowl, he got a $100,000 bonus. That's a big deal. That's a lot of coin, especially at that time. And he was sitting there, he was sitting at number 1 in Pro Bowl voting. But they said, we need to do this so that we can win a Super Bowl. And he made the move, and he still ended up about 3rd in the voting for the, I believe he moved from guard to center, and he still ended up third or fourth in Pro Bowl voting as a center, even though he'd only started for about 5 weeks. Because he moved and was voting at guard, stopped, he ended up not being voted to the Pro Bowl that year. And that happened several times. He talked about that he would get moved in the middle of a season. And even if it was just for one game, it would disrupt that Pro Bowl voting. And, you know, he missed out on All Pros because of this. He was absolutely an All Pro talent. He was absolutely a multiple time Pro Bowl talent. But because he was willing to do what was needed for the team and sacrifice for the team, that there's accolades that he should be getting today. You know, you could make an argument that he was a Hall of Fame level talent at guard, that he should be there, but the accolades don't follow his name because he made sacrifices for the team. He made financial sacrifices for the team to win a Super Bowl. And he talked about us that with us about how players have to be willing to sacrifice to reach that ultimate goal. And Jesse was the ultimate guy to do that. And so because of that, he is number 3 on my list.
Yeah, definitely can't argue anything there. We're getting nitpicky at that. If he's 3 or 4 or 2, whatever. But yeah, want to thank him for being on the show. We definitely got to try and get him back. At number 3 for me, I had a guy who has, out of Pelham, Georgia, has 25 career interceptions, Don Griffin. So I don't know if that's a bit of a, like, oh, like, you know, but I think for me, my dad would tell me stories of...
He was on my honorable mentions.
Yeah, so I just think he, you know... Pro Bowler, you know, he wasn't just a guy who made the team. I mean, for me, the impact you have and that kind of thing, how many years you play, that kind of thing, how many games are you the guy, like, starting? And, like, he was the guy, you know? And so,
yeah, again, kind of in that lost era of the 49ers where we don't think about as much, but was a solid long-term starter for the 49ers.
No question. Yep. So not a whole lot to say, but Don Griffin for me, and I could be talked into even right this second to switching out Jesse and Don, but it's kind of here nor there, but I could be definitely talked into that, but I have him on my list. Who is your number two?
My number two, coming in at number two, drafted out of San Jose State in the 1951 draft, we have wide receiver Billy Wilson.
Okay, so I was wondering who the guy was going to be that we don't share. Like,
and yeah. So for me, so I have Billy Wilson there, and shame on you for not having Billy Wilson on your list. This is another one that you know goes back quite a while. Again, 1951 was when he was drafted, but he was a 6-time Pro Bowler, a 4-time All Pro, 3-time second team All Pro, 1-time first team All Pro. He had a 1,000-yard season at a time when there was only like 10 games played on the year. And it was in that era of football. It wasn't like the ball was being flung around everywhere, but he was the number one wide receiver when Y.A. Tittle was playing quarterback for the 49ers and is a big part of Y.A. Tittle being in the Hall of Fame. He was the number one receiver by a mile for the 49ers, has you can still find it there on the interwebs. Has a great catch he had on for a touchdown that he caught over the now famous for coaching Don Shula. But he was the guy in San Francisco. He was Jerry Rice for them before Jerry Rice. And so that's who Billy Wilson was. Fantastic receiver. Did all sorts of things. Set some NFL records during that time. And really, brought an explosive element to that 49ers offense and them being able to throw the ball in a team when teams are running the ball 90% of the time. I know that's hyperbole, but still, Billy Wilson is there for me at number two. Again, the accolades, you can't ignore a guy that has 6 Pro Bowls, has 4 All Pros, and has the numbers that he had at the time he played. I mean, still, it was almost like 800 yards a season, every season. And if you put that in perspective, that's like a guy today getting a 1,400-yard season every season and making 6 Pro Bowls and making 4 All-Pros. I mean, this is a Julio Jones type of, compared to the rest of the league, kind of guy. Yeah, absolutely. I have Billy, and he was drafted in the 26th round, something like that. It was really late. Billy Wilson there as wide receiver. And Zach, give me a hard time. Here's a guy.
Here's a guy who. So I will say, football was just different for me. I'll admit I didn't go back that far. But that's completely fair. I have nothing to say like, oh, he shouldn't be on the list or anything like that. He should be definitely on the list instead of Andy Lee. I will say that. But at my number two is going to be Brock Purdy. And I just feel like even if he retired yesterday and just worked for John Deere, which, as we know, could be a possibility because, man, they're paying him more than the 49ers are.
It pretty much, yeah. And he's helping them. He's helping them look for the next chief tractor officer.
I wonder if he's really boosting sales. There's got to be people in Iowa who already have a John Deere. Like, what are they doing? Like, I don't know. It's cool. So. At number two, when all the reasons why you were giving as to why he was even on the list is the exact reason why he is number two for me. There's not much else to say, but when you hold a certain record, and for me, it is about the position that you play. Now, here's a guy who plays quarterback and is so meaningful at that position.
I mean, so, it is the most important position. Yeah, it's in not football, even close. And it's not even close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's my reason.
So I guess here's my reasoning why he wasn't higher on the list. And that is, if we were making a list of best second round picks of all time in 2000, going into the 2014 season, in the offseason 2014, for me, Kaepernick would have been like number two, number three on that list. Then there was a history of a performance for the next 3 years, and there was a lot of other things that went on. I'm not getting into that, but that diminished where he would be among the list of people. And so for me, it's looking at Brock Purdy and saying, yes, what he has done is absolutely fantastic. It's absolutely amazing. It needs to be there, but he's only been in the league for 2 years. And I don't see any signs that his play is going to drop off, that he's going to get figured out. I hate that saying. I hate that phrase. When teams get enough film on Purdy, he's going to get figured out. Look,
Seattle,
this is not a situation where a guy has a unique physical trait that brings something unique to an offense as far as schematically. Like, for example, the read option coming in. Teams are going, we haven't seen this in the NFL. How do we defend this? It's very much like when the Dolphins had no quarterback and they suddenly were running Wildcat and they won like 10 games that year. And they had Ricky Williams and Ronnie Brown that they were having a huge effect on the league, because the league's sitting here going, how do we stop this? Because we haven't seen this before. It's not a situation of we haven't seen this before. Teams have seen pocket quarterbacks for a very, very, very long time. There's no like one simple way of, well, we just need to figure out how to account for the plus one or slant this way, and we can now start taking this away from him. If you can squeeze the pocket, he's not good at rolling out this way. He's not good at rolling out that way. He can't, you know, we're not seeing that kind of stuff. One thing we saw with Kaepernick was that he struggled making those layered throws in the intermediate areas of the field. So it was take away things deep, and it was set your landmarks at a certain point. And then if you could disrupt the pocket in certain ways, you knew he was going to roll out this way because the ball wasn't always coming out on time. And that's where things started to get figured out with Kaepernick. Now, again, it wasn't like he was completely shut down. I'm not saying that at all, but I don't see that same thing happening with Purdy, because he's operating Kyle Shanahan's system and he's operating at an extremely high level, much like you would see Drew Brees operating Sean Payton's system for so long. It was like people didn't sit there and say, well, you know, given enough film on Drew Brees, he's going to get figured out. Those are the kinds of traits you're seeing with Brock Purdy. So I don't see him just, you know, oh, they have enough film and they figured it out. Well, teams have had film on the Shanahan offense for 30 years and it has not been figured out. So, you know, there's certain keys that you have to play there, but it's not like there's just one way to do this, or you just do one or two things and suddenly they're playing left-handed and they can't do it. So, you know, he's operating that system really well. But again, that's why I didn't have him a little bit higher on the list. But I completely understand where your list is at. So are we at number one now? Are we at that spot?
We are, and we are.
I think we should hit some honorable mentions, though. I think we should hit some honorable mentions.
That's what I was
For me, I have a few honorable mentions coming in as a 23rd round pick. 23rd round pick in the 1957 draft was lineman John Thomas. Started out at tackle, played most of his career at guard for the 49ers during that late 50s into 60s era, was an 8-year starter for them, made one Pro Bowl and one time All Pro. That's a pretty darn good career for a 23rd round pick. So John Thomas is there on my honorable mentions. Another guy, Tommy Hart. Defensive end, drafted 1968. He had one Pro Bowl, but when you actually look at his career, now this was also at a time when sacks were not an official stat. So they didn't always go into when guys were selected to Pro Bowls and all pros. But you look at his, again, it's unofficial, but pretty close to accurate measurings here. The guy had two seasons where he posted more 16 plus sacks. I mean, that's pretty darn good years. And he had other seasons. I think he had 10 and a half sacks one year. He had 12 another, and then it was like 8.5. Like, he had a pretty good career for the 49ers there, Tommy Hart, and was a sack monster at a time when those were not. And Adam roasting me in the chat. Thanks, Adam. I did not say, here's a guy who had 16 sacks. I did not say that.
You said, here's a guy, then dot, dot, dot. Like, no, later
I said,
on,
I said he was a player. So, did you have Tommy Hart on your honorable mentions?
No, I wrote down three, and they were, one was in jest, just to have some fun. We're having a fun show here, and Elvis has entered the chat. Elvis Gerback
in there, did you?
Because that touchdown to Jerry Rice at Dallas single-handedly is the reason why he's even in discussion. So that's all. That's all I got for Elvis. That's literally the only thing there is to say. He was a heck of a backup, a good teammate, and that's all I got to say.
You put Elvis in here. I saw him on there, and I was like, no, I can't. I cannot have the Gerb.
Oh, as a, and I can't either.
As an honorable mention.
Well,
come on.
And again, it's not an honorable, it's a funny mention. It's not an honorable.
You just
honorable
have to mention him. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, just have to mention. It's not an honorable.
And if people forget that the reason why Trent Dilfer ended up in San Francisco, you know, because Zach mentioned it of the that year with Jim Hostler, and Trent Dilfer was playing quarterback for the 49ers because Alex Smith was dealing with the shoulder separation and then forearm issues, that the reason why Trent Dilfer ended up in San Francisco after as a backup quarterback after winning a Super Bowl was because Brian Billick, who, you know, famously had worked with Bill Walsh, helped Bill write his book, The Winning Edge, that Brian Billick, who was head coach of the Ravens and had Trent Dilfer as his starting quarterback when they had the greatest defense that the NFL has ever seen, he traded Trent Dilfer away to the Seattle Seahawks because he got Elvis Gerback, and Elvis Gerback was his guy. And because he had come out of the San Francisco West Coast offense, and Brian Billick running a West Coast offense needed somebody who he thought could bring more explosion to their offense and knew the West Coast offense as well. So he brought Elvis Gerback in and shipped Trent Dilfer off after he won a Super Bowl to the Seattle Seahawks. And then the Seattle Seahawks let him go, and the 49ers picked up Trent Dilfer. So, you know, there is a thing to come back that it's all up here in the noggin somewhere. But I remember Brian Billick talking about how much he loved Elvis Gerback, and then that did not work out. And Brian Billick got fired a few years later. So yeah. There's that. I have another honorable mention. He was a lineman. Now, his best years didn't come with the 49ers, but he was a multiple-time Pro Bowl selection, a three-time Pro Bowler in 1966, 67, and 68. And his career was a little bit shorter because of a knee injury, but he ended up having a long career as an offensive line coach, and that is Howard Mudd. He was picked by the 49ers. I think he was a 20th-round pick, somewhere around there, by the 49ers. Again, you have to have an honorable mention when a guy's had a career that spans like 8 seasons and it only ends because of injury, and he made 3 Pro Bowls during that time, and he played 5 of those with the 49ers. So Howard Mudd, he was a guy that again has had a lot of impact on the league as well. Another player that I had on my honorable mentions, 7th round pick out of Oregon, center Fred Quillen. He was picked, and he made 2 Pro Bowls with the 49ers and started at center for 2 Super Bowls with them, and was an 9-year starter for the 49ers. 7th round pick, you get your center, and he was a big piece of that 49ers offensive line. We've covered pretty much the entire 49ers offensive line through this from the 80s when you look at that. When you look at these lists, we've included everybody that was on that offensive line. That's how good that offensive line was. Right. And all of them have accolades in some way. So did you have any more honorable mentions?
Just not deep down.
I have a couple more.
They're not honorable. It's just, hey, remember that guy. And my two are, I'll just say, and again, because of Chris Berman, the way he would take on people's names and it just stuck in my head, Fred Beasley.
Yes.
I just like the guy. Okay. Like, call me crazy.
Sixth round pick of the 1998 draft out of Auburn University, two-time all pro, one-time pro bowler, Fred Beasley, sometimes forgotten in that 49ers backfield because of the era he played, you know, of the rough 99 and 2000 seasons. And then 2003 and 2004. But he was a big part of that. I mean, it was known as the best blocking fullback in the league. He was, that era's very much, you know, Kyle Juszczyk that he followed in that footsteps. Again, the 49ers have a good lineage of fullbacks. When you look at Tom Rathman and Fred Beasley and
Edwards.
And William Floyd, you know, William Floyd played fullback and running back and now Kyle Juszczyk. And I almost included what's his butt, the linebacker that was converted to fullback that played for the 49ers, but he had a bunch of domestic violence issues there. So he will be the man that is unnamed,
dishonorable.
Yeah. You know, and if you remember Fred Beasley, he was getting a little long in the tooth, and the 49ers were dealing with salary cap issues. So they let him go and they brought in Moran Norris, who was shaped like a fridge, was a good blocker, but my goodness, he had hands of stone. I remember I was at a game with the 40. It was the 49ers were playing. I believe it was the Singletary pants drop game that Alex Smith was starting there, and I remember they went for it on fourth down and they ran a play action fake at the goal line, and Moran Norris was wide freaking open in the flat, and Alex like floated a ball out there, and he and Moran Norris turned around and tried to backpedal, but was the stiffest moving man I have ever seen, and he fell over his own legs, and the ball bounced off of his hands. It was a fourth down attempt at the goal line, and it was like literally in this, because it was at the Seahawks field. The Seahawks fans started laughing hysterically at us. It was that moment I knew we had no shot in that game. And again, that was the game that Mike Singletary infamously went into halftime and dropped his pants in front of the team to say, this is what you guys look like out there. This is how embarrassing you guys are there. And that was part of it because of Moran Norris, but he came in to replace Fred Beasley, the bees. He was the bee's knees there. Sixth round pick at fullback. I have two more guys. I have DJ Jones because I love DJ Jones, and he has been a very, very solid player who was picked. I know Adam's running out of time, so we're going to move through here pretty quick. The last honorable mention, and this one was tough to even put on the honorable mentions because his best years did not come with the 49ers, but it was because he was always in the shadow of another guy. But the offense that was unveiled with him with the 49ers really was cutting edge when you think about what teams are doing in the league of using players as Swiss Army knives, because he was known as the Swiss Army knife of the 49ers offense during his time, and that was Delanie Walker out of the University of Central Missouri, sixth round. You know, he was always in the shadow of Vernon Davis, but he was used in so many different ways, and it caused so many problems for that offense. The 49ers 2011 offense that went to the NFC Championship game went on the backs of Delanie Walker and Vernon Davis because they had almost no production from their wide receivers. Michael Crabtree was okay, but if you remember that NFC Championship game where they went to overtime, it was deep into overtime. Michael Crabtree had one catch. Their entire passing offense was Delanie Walker and Vernon Davis. Because they were throwing passes. If you remember, the 49ers wide receiver core was absolutely decimated by that game. They were starting Brett Swain, who they had signed 2 weeks earlier. Like, he had not been with the team until January. And they, and I remember Alex throwing a fade to Brett Swain, but Delanie Walker, he ended up going to the Titans because the 49ers had to choose pay Vernon Davis or pay Delanie Walker. They paid Vernon Davis. Delanie Walker ended up going to the Titans and he made three Pro Bowls. He had a 1,000-yard season, was one of the best tight ends in the league. So Delanie, and for a sixth round pick, that's pretty impressive. But he was there on the bubble because again, his seasons with the 49ers weren't that impressive,
right?
But I believe he had a bigger impact than
Tennessee
than he had there. And when he went to Tennessee, you saw the talent was absolutely there. So
yeah, no question.
Those are all my honorable mentions. Oh no, yeah. I had one other. It was John Ayers. He was a guard from 1978 to 1987. Again, part of that 49ers dynasty era line. He was a starter for, you know, eight of those years in there, and he was picked in like the 12th round, I believe. So I had John Ayers on there as well as an honorable mention.
Okay, I'm gonna let you bring it home. I have a meeting that I have to get to, so I apologize, but I will say Ricky Jean Francois was definitely just okay, like he made some good plays, like okay, cool, whatever. And then I will say that, of course, our number one is the anytime you have the word the, and it's like that other people who don't even like your team say it, like it's like, okay, that's a thing. So just, man, rest in peace. Thank you to Dwight Clark for what he gave our franchise, and I'll let you take it away. I got to run. Obviously, he is our number one. So take it away, Johnny, and I will catch you guys on Monday.
Yeah, well, good time, Adam. Thanks for jumping in with us. He does have to run. He's got a meeting he's got to go to. But yes, as he said, number one, the number one late round pick of all time for the 49ers is Dwight Clark. When you think of the 49ers, there's no player other than, you know, it's like Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Dwight Clark. When you think of dynasty era 49ers, Steve Young is in there, right? But you could almost make an argument that Dwight Clark is more iconic than Steve Young, even as a 49ers, because there has been no clip in the NFL that has been viewed more, shown more, that comes up more than Dwight Clark, the catch in the back of the end zone, because of what that meant for the 49ers, for a team that had not won anything as far as in the NFL up to that point, and what that moment kicked off for the next 14 years, 15 years of what that moment really kicked off there with Dwight Clark in the back of the end zone. He's got his statue of the catch enshrined there at the stadium, what he's meant to the team. The reason why we talked to Jesse Cipolla on August 8th was because he was unavailable on August 7th, 8-7, because that was Dwight Clark Day at training camp. And Dwight Clark has meant so much. And then moving into the front office there with the 49ers for so long, Dwight Clark is absolutely everything that you would that you think about when you think of the great 49ers teams and what they were, who they were, everything that they were about. You know, you could make an argument that Dwight Clark should be in the Hall of Fame. He's not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You can make an argument. It's hard. His numbers weren't always, you know, what you would consider Hall of Fame worthy. And some of that, again, some of his career was wide receiver. Some of it was tight end. He was really that hybrid kind of player. But I will always remember, it was a commercial that the NFL had put out. It was in the early 2010s, and they had a guy in the end zone who was on a ladder, just showing you exactly how high off the ground Dwight Clark's catch was. And it was filmed at Candlestick, and it was Don Cheadle who was in that commercial. I remember, if you remember that, put something in the chat if your memory's weird like mine. But because again, that is maybe the most iconic moment in NFL history. You know, there's a helmet catch from Tyree and in the Super Bowl with the Giants, but you know, people remember that, but it's not iconic like Joe Montana to Dwight Clark. So Dwight Clark there, just everything he has been for the 49ers organization, what he was for the 49ers organization. And like Adam said, rest in peace with Dwight Clark and everything that, you know, he was battling with health wise. A warrior, somebody that, I mean, my goodness, you can't say enough good things about Dwight Clark. So Dwight Clark is, it has to be number one, the best late round pick for the 49ers ever. If you agree with that, give me a thumbs up in the chat, or you know, a hashtag 87 there in the chat with Dwight Clark. His number is retired with the 49ers. That's why nobody's ever going to wear 87 again for them. They retired that number. So you know, Dwight Clark, everything that you would hope for it to be. Now, hopefully, as we go into next week, the 49ers will have some, will be picking some players that will end up on a list like this in 10 years. That's what the hope is. And I think Adam nailed it on the head when he said the one thing that is amazing about the NFL draft is that it represents hope. And that's why we love this time coming around. It's why you love seeing some of the kids in the draft war room, you know, rooms waiting to come out, and when they come out and their name's been called and they've made it to the NFL, that this is that thing that they've been working for their entire life. It's the thing that they've been trying to get to their entire life. The endless hours in the gym, the endless hours studying film, the endless hours on the practice field, working on their craft to get to the highest levels of football, and to have that happen. And then the hope that it represents for every team, because as we've seen with these, you know, when we've gone through some of the greatest first round picks of all time and some of the worst first round picks of all time, when you see a guy like Kwame Harris on there and Mike Rumpf, you know, at the time, those guys were really considered great draft picks. Mike Rumpf was considered a really good draft pick. He had amazing size. He was like a 220-pound corner who could run a 4.440, and he had length, and he had everything that you thought you know would be amazing. And he ended up not working out at all. And then you have guys like Brock Purdy, 262nd pick in the draft, who becomes your franchise quarterback and saves the franchise out of a pick that didn't work out when you put three first-round picks in a quarterback. That's what's amazing about the NFL draft, you know, and that yes, the numbers say that you have a high hit rate the higher you are, but people can come out of anywhere. John Thomas, 23rd round in the NFL draft, ends up being a player for the 49ers for 8 years. Jesse Sapolu, 11th round draft pick. Brock Purdy, 7th round draft pick. You know, these guys are that they've shown that when the draft comes around, we like to, you know, there's so much fanfare given over the first and second rounds, but I remember looking through, it was the third round was the hardest one for me to deal with because there were so many good players pulled out of the third round for the 49ers. It was harder than the second round than for me. And just seeing that and going through that process reminded me, just because it's the third and fourth round pick doesn't mean that these guys can't be amazing players, huge, huge contributors to your team. Lee Woodall, 6th round pick, starting linebacker for the 49ers in a year they went to the Super Bowl, made a team that had lost the NFC Championship game the year before. So, you know, while we can sit here and say, you know, this team is stacked and they have players everywhere, and you know it's going to be really hard for a rookie to come in and beat out certain spots, never count somebody out. And it doesn't matter necessarily what round they were picked in. And we have some later round picks from last year that we're hoping develop into something this year. And that's what the beauty of the NFL draft is, and we're going to see that next week. And so just because a guy's, you know, you can forget about who the players are, the 49ers are picking in the fourth, fifth, sixth rounds and say, you know, those are late round picks. Probably not really going to turn out to anything. You know, they might not, but they might also be one of the greatest players the 49ers have ever had at that position. You never know, because it's the NFL draft, and it's hope that comes around, and it's what we love about football, and it's what we love about the draft, and it's what we love about seeing this and what's so fascinating about watching a team year after year after year is how do they build and how do they find these players and make that happen. And the NFL draft is where that all starts and where it happens. So it's, you know, this is the big, the really the biggest singular day outside of the Super Bowl for any team, because this is a day that really your franchise either gets better or gets worse. That's just what it is this time of the year, because you have to be able to pull players out of a draft each year because you can't keep everybody. And so it'd be really fascinating to see how the 49ers do. You know, and people love to grade drafts right after they happen. There's a bunch of these drafts we've gone through that, man, the 49ers pulled a whole bunch of really good players. And I'm sure there was different people who looked at the draft that year right after it happened and said, ah, they totally botched that draft. There were so many other good players out there. But usually time will tell. But it was great fun. Great fun. Thank you all for hanging with us through this series we've had. Again, there's been 800 people doing mock drafts. There's so many good ones out there. We're going to look to dive really into the draft a lot more next week and talk about some things. For me, I don't get too much into the mock draft side of it just because I've never seen a mock draft that ever turned out the way the draft actually happened. In this, even a first round, I've never seen anybody. It's kind of like, you know, March Madness of nobody's ever been able to put together the full bracket and predict what was actually going to happen. You really can't ever predict fully what happens at in the draft. Your best chance of doing that is going pick at a time as the draft is going. And so for me, it's usually I've looked into a lot of players. I know more about them for when the 49ers pick them. And I don't want to sit here and then, you know, on the backside of it, say, oh, man, they really botched this by not picking this guy. You know, that doesn't, for me, it doesn't look forward to our season. So I don't get as much into that. That's just me personally. So that's what we do on this channel. I think there's a lot of great people who do some amazing stuff, and definitely go check them out and what they've been doing. They've been doing some really good work on it. So we're gonna start looking into some things, more just some names to really pay attention to as the draft goes, that maybe look out for and see where they end up landing. But you know, the 49ers last year made a bunch of surprises with me. I did not see them picking Daryl Luter last year in the sixth round. So, you know, that was something that, looking at it afterwards, though, I really did like the pick, but he wasn't somebody that was necessarily on my radar. But then when you start putting together how he fits in the scheme, you can see why they liked him. So, you know, it's something that I usually hold off until after the draft, see what the 49ers do, and then we'll really dive into who those guys are. But thank you guys so much for hanging with us through this trip down memory lane of ranking 49ers draft picks over the years and where guys are. A lot of honorable mentions on the list, and some guys are really hard to leave off of. If you're still mad at me about the Andy Lee thing, just let me know in the comments. I can take it. It's all good. But thank you guys so much for tuning in. And until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and go Niners.